Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they have become counterproductive, that they cannot be fixed. Our mission is to know who is working against our interests, to understand how and why they are doing so, because exposing and condemning such schemes isn't hateful. It's the most caring thing we can do. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to continue to explore the differences between God and Paul, so that those who have been beguiled by the Christian New Testament might be liberated from it. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, it is 877-300-7645. It might be considered a minor item to many. It is a significant item to me. Golf star Phil Mickelson was not involved in insider trading in the shares of Clorox when the billionaire investor Carl Icahn was attempting an unsolicited takeover of the company back in 2011, the New York Times is reporting. Clorox was among the stocks that U.S. authorities were examining as part of a three-year investigation into well-timed trades by Mickelson and Las Vegas gambler William Walters. The FBI and the Security Exchange Commissions did not find any evidence that Mickelson traded Clorox shares, but Icahn and Walters remain under investigation over Clorox, the report said, citing the People. The FBI is pursuing a criminal investigation in the case, while the SEC is running a parallel civil inquiry. Now, you might wonder, why would I even bring this up? Because I recognize that the FBI was being abusive, that the federal government is being abusive, that in this particular case, Phil Mickelson's reputation was dragged through the mud. He was the top story on every international news source that I read. And there must be 30 of them that I consider. And all of them said that Phil Mickelson is involved in insider trading. It wasn't true. The FBI has conducted a sting investigation against Mickelson because they don't like Walters. The FBI has twice tried to convict Walters, and twice they have been rebuffed, once by a jury, the other time by a judge. But the FBI has always been and continues to be an organization without a moral compass. That's why they are so dangerous. They've always been dangerous. J. Edgar Hoover was the perfect example of an organization completely and totally out of control. You know, the insider reports that fortunately the Washington Post actually had the courage to present while everyone in Washington had a conniption fit saying, oh, lives are at stake if you publish that. American lives will be put at risk. Well, the only thing that was put at risk is the credibility of the organization, which was destroyed. It ought not exist. We ought not have an American Gestapo. But we do. The FBI needs to be disbanded. You know, look at the situation with Phil Mickelson. Never even traded the stock. And yet his reputation was trashed by the FBI. All because they want at his friend. As for Icahn, what he is doing has been shown to be legal for decades. He doesn't do anything. He's not doing anything different this time than other times, which is that he sees a stock that he thinks is underperforming because of management. He tries to buy a large share of that stock so that he can replace the management with management he thinks will be better for shareholders. And it's called greenmail. A lot of times you'll say, okay, present management, board of directors and executives, you don't want me to replace you? Then you buy the stock that I have just purchased in your company back at a premium. Well, perhaps it shouldn't be legal. It is legal. And so Icahn is not going to be convicted. And as for Walters, once you've lost twice, FBI, give up. You're wrong. The airstrike against, or the strike, I should say, against the airport in Karachi was really an extraordinary event. What it signifies is two things that I have been saying on this program for a very long time. One is that bullets and bombs manufacture vastly more Islamic terrorists or religious fanatics than they kill. You cannot fight a religious cause with bullets and bombs. If you do, you're going to manufacture more of them. That's the nature of a religious zealot. And the second thing is that by invading Afghanistan and pushing the most fundamentalist Muslims, the Taliban, into Pakistan and arming them to the gills with American weapons because of the transport of American weapons through Pakistan, that we were going to put the Pakistani government at great risk to being overturned by the fundamentalists, by the Taliban, and that that was a serious suicidal act for America because the Pakistanis have nuclear bombs, and they will fall into the fundamentalist hands. Both of those things have been proven to be true based upon the Taliban's brazen attack, well-armed attack, well-coordinated attack against the Karachi airport. You know, Karachi airport is the single most important building and the most populous city in the country. 18 million people live in Karachi. And if you look at the pictures of what they accomplished there, they destroyed most of the airport. Any airline that isn't purely Islamic has already stopped flying into Karachi. It destroyed any prospects for peace talks, of course, with the Taliban, which was a waste of time. And it says, and this is what people are coming to realize, that the all-out military offensive against the Taliban turned out to be counterproductive. Government airstrikes on the strongholds of the Taliban triggered the tactical shift. The sources at Tehrik-e-Taliban, and it's the Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan, the TTP, as the Taliban is formally known, that were angered over the raids. And they said, all right, you're going to bomb us, we'll take the fight to the largest cities. And they did. A top Taliban commander confirmed to Reuters that attacks involving aircraft were part of the new strategy to counter the government's preparations for a full-fledged operation against them. And the only reason the government is trying to oppose them, they're equally Islamic. It's just, you know, who gets to wield the stick? Who is empowered? Those Muslims or other Muslims? So we decided to kill, it says, they decided to kill innocent people by their bombs, and we hit their nerve centers in major cities, is what the Taliban is reporting. Because they killed innocent Muslims with their bombs, that's the consequence, that's the motivation, we decided to bring the fights to them. It is what always happens in these cases as to why the deployment of a military in places like Afghanistan and Iraq is counterproductive. We manufacture vastly more enemy than we kill, and we enrage the enemy so that they are willing to kill us at an ever higher degree. If you can't figure that out, you ought not be voting in political polls. You ought not be political. You ought not be in the military if you can't think this through. It's what we witnessed in Vietnam. Because there the religion is the religion of man. Communism, socialism. But in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, it's the religion of Islam. The more you fight it with bullets and bombs, the more you empower it. This article is just amazing. It says, a year ago, the daily editorial conference at Nigeria's Garden newspaper might have paused to consider where on the inside pages to place a story about the latest Boko Haram attack. These days, there's no reason to think. Major raids by the Islamic insurgents go to the front and center of the newspaper, and then further generating comment pieces looking at every angle through the prism of Nigerian politics. Stunning. A year ago, Boko Haram was going into village after village, burning them down. A year ago, 2 years ago, and 3 years ago, Boko Haram was encircling entire communities, burning every home, burning every church, and forcing the local inhabitants to stay inside of the buildings as they burned them down, burning them alive. They were involved in particularly kidnapping boys that they required to join them on their jihad missions. They were as ruthless against passive Muslims as they were against Christians. They didn't emerge from nowhere. The only difference is that now that America has taken Libya away from the secular strongman, Muammar Gaddafi, and given the country to a gang of Islamic terrorists, gangs of Islamic terrorists, and has funneled billions of dollars worth of weapons to those terrorists through Qatar. Now the groups like Boko Haram, and it's not just there, it's also in the Central African Republic, it's also in Mali. The Muslims are vastly better armed, they're vastly more destructive because of what we have done. It was a consequence of aiding and abetting the Islamic jihadists who overthrew Muammar Gaddafi. It was insane what we did. It was suicidal what we did. It was moronic what America did. And you think of the advocates of that plan, Barack Hussein Obama and Senator John McCown. And you don't see either of them taking any responsibility or initiative for the damage that we did to not just Libya, but to the whole of Northern Africa. It is an amazing story. It goes on to say, as with the global press, coverage has increased as attacks have increased in recent months. And it's not that the attacks have increased in recent months. The only difference in the attacks in the recent months is that they involve kidnapping of little girls and the rape of those little girls and the murder and torture of those little girls. That's really the only difference. And now that Boko Haram has far better equipment, they have snazzy uniforms, they have far more powerful weapons, and they're deploying their equipment and their weapons more frequently. Otherwise, there's really no difference. Yes, on the Boko Haram front, this is the editorial director of newspaper in Nigeria. It says, we thought that Boko Haram was a flash in the pan, but it has become a very bad ulcer. This insurgency is political. Can you imagine? You're in charge of the editorial section of the newspaper in the capital of Nigeria. And you haven't figured out that Boko Haram is religious. You haven't figured out that when they went into village after village, burning hundreds of churches and thousands of homes and killing thousands of people year after year, and you couldn't figure out that what drove them, which was Islam, you thought that was a flash in the pan. You have a country that is 50% Islamic and 50% Christian. And you think that the terror that is manifest and amongst the Muslims was a flash in the pan? Is it any wonder? The world is so lost when an executive of a newspaper is this dense. Moving on to another subject in the Ukraine, the interior minister has said now. When you hear Ukraine interior minister, when you hear Ukraine government official, the first thing you ought to go is liar. Most of what they have said has been untrue. But this is a significant change in the status quo of the Ukraine, if in fact it is true. So I'm going to report it to you as if what he's saying is accurate, because if it is, then we have a game changer. The Ukraine's interior minister has said that three tanks have crossed the border from Russia into rebel areas of the east, and that heavy fighting is underway. The tanks entered the Ukraine, and by the way, the East is not the Ukraine. It has never been called the Ukraine. It is not the Ukraine. It has been part of Russia for a very long time, but it's never been called the Ukraine. Luhansk is the larger of the two regions, and it is appropriate to call it Luhansk. That's what Putin has been calling it. It is what the region has been for hundreds of years. The tanks entered Luhansk, along with other armor, through a checkpoint controlled by the rebels. Ukrainian forces engaged two of them, and fighting is underway, says the Ukraine's interior minister. There was no confirmation from the rebels, who reported a Ukrainian government tank attack near Luhansk. So there is, from the rebels, a confirmation that the government that is now sponsored by the U.S., that's paid for by the United States, that is encouraged by the United States, is using its tanks against the community of Luhansk. And now there is a report that several tanks may have now come from Russia into Luhansk. Pro-Russian separatists in the Donetsk and the Luhansk regions, which is the industrial heartland of the region, declared independence after holding referendums last month. But they were deemed illegal by the government of Kiev. When the Kiev government held referendums for their new elected officials, they were deemed legal. When they overturned their previous government by force, that was considered legal. When they 20 years ago decided to leave the Soviet Union, that was deemed legal. But now when the Luhansk and the Donetsk region wish to leave the just disgusting reprobates in Kiev, that's considered illegal. So people's votes only matter if you like the way they vote. If you don't like the way they vote, then they don't matter. There is tanks that these stories from the interior minister has these tanks crossing the border from Russia along with armored troop carriers. And by the way, it's only a matter of time. It's only a matter of time. If the Kiev authorities, sponsored by the United States and NATO, continue to deploy the army against the Russians in the Luhansk and Donetsk regions, it is a fait accompli. The Russians will eventually engage. They'll either supply the other side with counterbalancing hardware, or they will engage in terms of their own military. It is inevitable. The rebel spokesperson told Russia's news agency that they were fighting a force of more than 40 Ukrainian tanks north of the city of Luhansk. If that is the case, if this is a tank battle against the city of Luhansk, the Russians will engage. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to turn our attention to two more stories, and then to the main story for today. A teenager, another one, has been found hanging from a tree in a village in northern India. This was the fourth woman to die in such a way in recent weeks. There are menacing religious dogmas out there other than Islam. As a matter of fact, Islam isn't even the most deadly religious dogma. We do have Glenn on the line, and you know, Glenn occasionally takes me to task for inferring that communism is the religion of man, and that those influenced by communism are as devoted, as and zealous as are those who are influenced by Islam, and sometimes even some wacko Christians as well. But the fact is that Islam isn't the only ruthless religion out there. And India right now, with the imposition of their caste system and just the morbid application of morals, what's happening in India, and it's occurring day after day, is that A woman in India will attempt, in one of the lower castes, she will attempt to have a life. She will say, you know, I don't want the arranged marriage. You're not going to sell me like a piece of meat. She'll say something like, no, you just because you're an elder in the community, you have no right to rape me. No, I don't want to continue to squander my life in this godforsaken village. I want out. If a woman expresses any volition in the lower caste systems in India, the way that the elders respond is they strip her naked, they gang rape her, and then they hang her. And it's happening over and over again. You know, imagine a religion, this is Hinduism now, being so warped that the moral leadership says that a woman who doesn't capitulate should be stripped naked, gang raped, and then hung. And yet it's happening day after day. Girls as young as 13, as old as in their mid-40s. Two of the most interesting here recently. One is in a police station where the man who perpetrated and orchestrated the gang rape and subsequent murder was a police chief. And another was in a church where the clerics in the church, and this is now a Christian church in the midst of the Hindu malfeasance that is occurring here, where it's church officials that are guilty of abusing the woman. It is a real serious problem in India now, and it's out of control. Hello, Glenn. Good day to you.
Hello, Yana. I'm sorry to hear about such travesties occurring under Hinduism as well. Here in the West, we tend to meet expatriate Indians who are Hindus, but usually of the, by definition, of the upper caste.
Yes.
They're able to travel abroad.
Correct. Yeah. If you're the lower caste, you're not traveling to America because you can't get out of your community without them harassing you and perhaps even killing you.
Right. Actually, what I originally called in about, I don't mind the digression, but the backwards digression to it, you know, about all the violence and bombing that's going on. It's just this stuff is just growing very rapidly, you know, in Iraq and Pakistan.
And that's going to be our major story is going to be Iraq. The reason I worked up to it is the point that you've made so many shows in a row where you're saying that right now the whole world is just ablaze in violent aggression.
Right.
And so that was kind of the point is that I wanted to, because the story in Iraq is mind-blowing. And its consequences and its implications. And I wanted to build up to it because of the fact the whole world right now is ablaze in violence and war and in unbelievable aggression, whether it's Nigeria with Boko Haram, whether it's the Taliban now bombing the airports in Karachi, Pakistan, whether it's the government in Kiev using 40 tanks to go against a town. And the east, I mean, the whole world is exploding.
Yeah, and in Ukraine, you've got Poroshenko scouring eBay, Amazon, and Craigslist for used Sukhoi and MiG parts. You know?
Yeah, really.
Because he doesn't have a parts source now. You know, and so, yeah, they've got to keep the war going. I think what we need is more drones, more bombings. The Kurds want us to come help. We need to bomb more. See, that's the problem. We haven't been bombing enough.
We bombed, we killed 10 people today in Pakistan with our drones. You know, the story, the Pakistani story, and you know, I have no pleasure in saying I told you so, but the Pakistani story is the story of I told you so. It's
right.
It's when you use your military to try to resolve a religious crisis, you will always make that crisis worse. You know, even if you look at Boko Haram. Boko Haram was menacing, to be sure. But when the Nigerian military kidnapped Abu Bakr's wife and children, and then started to use bombers to bomb regions that that Boko Haram was occupying. They went from being vicious to being just unbelievably merciless. You can't bomb and shoot your way to victory against a religion. You'll always make it worse.
Right. And not to mention, like, the alliance with the Pakistani ISI has always been exceedingly naive. You know, the idea
Correct.
That you're going to manipulate and co-opt that particular organization is just extraordinarily naive. It's going to backfire
Correct.
On you.
Right. The Pakistani ISI, which would be the equivalent of the U.S. CIA, and by the way, I would not say that the ISI was more corrupt or more grotesquely immoral than the CIA. I'd put them at par and say these guys ought to get along just splendidly because they're equally corrupt. But the ISI is a religious organization. It is overtly fundamentalist in its devotion to Islam, and it is the primary, the world's largest state sponsor of terrorist organization. There is no larger state sponsor of terrorist organizations than Pakistan, and they're all coordinated through their ISI.
Do you really think you're not going to get backstabbed when you're dealing in that situation?
Well, you look at the United States. The one success that that Dianne Feinstein, is chairwoman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, had to justify the use of the NSA mega capture of data, was the fellow that was a double agent that America deployed. Within the Pakistani terrorist organizations, and so our agent, our CIA agent, with our own knowledge, was planning the bombing in Mumbai, India, killed 250 people, and he was on our payroll.
Right.
I mean, how is it that you think that you can, as you say, dance with a cobra and not expect to be bitten?
Right, and with all these areas, like, all this volatility, I don't know, a lot of people may not remember that it wasn't that long after 9/11, it kind of, like, it was dwarfed by the 9/11 sentiment. It wasn't that long after 9/11 that Pakistan and India were threatening to nuke each other over Kashmir, you know?
Correct.
So, I mean, there's nothing to prevent those sorts of chauvinistic, nationalistic things from rising up again as instability increases.
Yeah, you'll notice, too, that the United States had a conniption fit and embargoed India when they developed their nuclear weapons. But we continued to supply billions of dollars to the Pakistani army when they developed their nuclear weapons. Now, who would you rather have nuclear weapons, the Indians or the Pakistanis?
Well, let's see, some place that was, like, heavily colonized by the British, where almost everybody speaks English. Yes, they may be Hindu, but they have strong pro-Western sensibilities.
Yes.
Let me think about that.
Yeah, really. Yeah, it's, and then not only do you provide all these weapons through to Pakistan, now you find that you have invaded Afghanistan, you've pushed the Taliban out of Afghanistan back into, to Pakistan, and you haven't bothered to think of the consequence of that is, oh, by the way, they have nuclear weapons. That probably was a really dumb idea. We could leave them in Afghanistan where all they've got is rocks to throw at little girls. Or we could push them into Pakistan. They can undermine the government, which they're doing in mass now, and they could use their nuclear bombs in America.
Right. No, they couldn't. No. About the worst, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't even begin to be able to actually use them to detonate them, you know, the way they were designed.
Not the way they were designed, you are correct. But that's not going to keep them from detonating them.
Well, I don't know if they could detonate them, but they could harvest the materials and use dirty bombs.
First of all, I do think they can detonate them. But
yeah, okay.
they because the architect of the lead architect of the Pakistani nuclear program is a fundamentalist Muslim who is a very close ally of Anwar Awlaki, that is extremely close to the most, to the leaders of the Taliban and to other fundamentalist Islamic organizations. And since he is the primary nuclear scientist behind that program, and he is in love with the Taliban, I'm positive they could. Now, they're not going to deploy them on intercontinental ballistic missiles. They're going to sail them into our cities. And when a nuclear bomb is detonated at ground level, it's vastly less destructive.
Right,
but you detonate a nuclear device on a sailboat in New York Harbor on the Hudson. It doesn't matter that it's less destructive than it would have been if it was detonated 300 feet in the air.
Well, that's the scenario from that movie from years ago where they used Charleston Harbor.
Yes.
That's
what they're going to do with them, and we made all of this possible, which is a... It's a shame. I mean, you just say, why in the world? It's apparent to me now that our educational system in promoting political correctness has so truncated the population's ability to exercise good judgment and has so rid those it has influenced of morality that the heads of our government, the heads of our military are incapable of thinking these things through. One last story before we turn our attention to Iraq. The economic crisis in Europe and North America has led to more than 10,000 extra suicides, according to figures from UK researchers. A study published in the British Journal of Psychiatry showed that suicides have risen markedly. It is interesting that while Europe has more people than the United States, half of the additional suicides, 4,750, were from accelerated suicides in the United States. You know, it's a wonder whether or not the suicides were exacerbated because of the recession, or whether or not the suicides were exacerbated by other issues, indoctrination rather than education, the surreal world of video games where, you know, you can fight and kill and be killed and then live another day via the computer. Why is it that people would rather die than live? You know, it is a coward's way out. When you think of suicide, you think of the pain that suicide is going to cause those in your family, those your friends. It is an incredibly selfish act, and you have to wonder, you know, what is it that's causing it. I wouldn't be. Personally, I wouldn't take the conclusion that 10,000 added people in Europe and the United States committed suicide solely because of the recession. Although I understand the financial pressures, a lot of people just say, you know, I want to give up. But when you think of the safety nets that exist in these countries, the ability to get unemployment benefits, the programs now to delay the banks, even when you're not paying your mortgage from them, taking your home back. Food stamps so that you have more than enough to eat. Their welfare after that. There are so many programs in this regard that you wouldn't think that economics would drive this alone. I'm going to share some thoughts on Al-Qaeda in Iraq. This particular article from CNN begins, Al-Qaeda-inspired militants in Iraq vowed Thursday to march to Baghdad. And this is after seizing two northern cities. You know, even when the media knows for certain that Al-Qaeda has absolutely nothing to do with the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, that they weren't part of Al-Qaeda when they were formed, that there was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq when they were formed, that they were simply Sunni Muslims that leagued it together for the express purpose of fighting two foes. One is the American invasion, and the second was the prevalence of Shia militias, particularly under Sattar. And so they were formed as Sunni militias. They could not have been formed as Al-Qaeda because there was absolutely no Al-Qaeda presence in Iraq when America invaded. Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein were absolute, unmitigated enemies. And the reason that there was a Sunni militias were formed, as I say, it was principally because they had to offset the influence of the Shiite, Mahi Mujahideen. But beyond that, the forces that America allegedly went into Iraq to defeat, the Republican Guards and the military of Iraq, they never fought. The moment America began the invasion, they simply capitulated. They tore off their uniforms. They ran away. They didn't fight. America did not actually fight the Iraqi military. And so when those who had fought on, or at least had participated in the Iraqi military, realized that their units were just disbanding and that there was no purpose of them fighting as a military against America, they took their weapons and they became Mujahideen. They became jihadists. But no one from Al-Qaeda was there at the time. Since that time, Zawahiri has publicly announced time after time that the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria is not an Al-Qaeda affiliated group, completely disavowing them. So they weren't born Al-Qaeda. They didn't exist, Al-Qaeda. They're being renounced by the lone spokesperson from Al-Qaeda today. And even when we looked at Osama bin Laden's correspondence, he wrote to them and condemned them, said, "I want nothing to do with you."